This is the 9.8 Podcast. All right, let's get right into it. This is episode 5 of the 9.8 Podcast. Thank you again for joining me. Today should be a pretty good one, as I just finished a bowl of cottage cheese, so I am ready to roll. And today's going to be kind of an extension on some thoughts that were shared in episode 4. If you were around for that one, we kind of went more of a Mythbusters approach to a lot of common themes and thoughts within the fitness industry, and dissected it a little bit, and a lot of, you know, kind of ring some truth to some myths that are out there, and why they've become myths in our industry. And today is going to be less objective, so I tried to go with the myth busting, try to go more objective with, you know, things like, you know, data driven research and objective facts. Today is going to be more of a personal spin, where I want to take some personal pet peeves that I have, you know, things that kind of make me angry, you know, when I see out there in the fitness industry, because I know we should be demanding more of ourselves as fitness professionals, and it kind of bugs me when I see a lot of things take place. So more subjective today. So obviously take some of these things that I have to say with a little bit of a grain of salt. However, know that also, on the other hand, the things that I have to say are, you know, coming from a place of practical experience as well. So there's kind of a little bit in both columns there. But again, this is my opinion. So we'll get right into it with the pet peeves. Again, in no particular order, because originally when I set out to do some pet peeves and I just started jotting down everything I could think of that was, you know, making me angry about things that I see put out there. And I had like 30 things written down. And I'm like, well, I don't want to, you know, have a podcast be 3 hours long. So try to condense this as much as I could, as the things that were really just kept coming to the top of my mind day after day. So I did kind of a multi-day process, and the things that kept floating up to the top, that's what we're going to go with. So again, no necessary particular order. This first one is something that has really been coming on here as of late, or maybe this is an indictment on my lack of awareness, but on social media, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, it can be a great place, especially in our industry. It can be a places where coaches collaborate, where trainers collaborate, where ideas get shared, where inspiration is drawn from. There's a lot of great things that can come from it. However, the pet peeve that I have here is you have such large accounts, you know, ESPN, Bleacher Report, Barstool Sports. You have these giant influential accounts. And I can't help but notice lately that the wrong things are getting highlighted, especially when it comes to working out. And maybe perhaps you've seen this, and please go ahead and follow me on Twitter if you don't already, at CoachPGR. Shameless plug there. A lot of times if I come across it, I'll retweet it, just kind of so you can kind of see some of the lunacy behind it. And sometimes I'll share a thought along with it. But, you know, I don't necessarily want to call it individual athletes, but a group like Bleacher Report will say, oh, so-and-so is getting after it this offseason. It'll be them, you know, jumping up onto a BOSU ball with a barbell on their back, and, you know, or it'll be them, you know, balancing on something while a trainer is throwing, you know, heavy weights at them, and they got to catch them. And it's just like, or one I saw the other day of, I think it was an NFL running back that was had a bar on his back, and hanging from the bar on each end were two resistant bands that had kettlebells on each end, which that setup can be a useful thing, to have that kind of variable resistance and that demand for stability within a lift can be cool. However, there was an agility component added into it. So now these kettlebells are swinging back and forth, and it's just a lot of the things that get shared on these accounts is, you know, making things seem sweet, and they're just, you know, it's one of those things where anybody who is worth his or her salt cube is just putting their head in their hands and like, what the hell are we doing? Because the dangerous part about it is, like, to me, somebody who's, you know, again, had the practical experience, gained the knowledge, you know, gone through the education, can kind of see through that. But it's the kids that I train, or it's the kids that any of these high school strength and conditioning coaches that I collaborate with a lot train and coach, they see this. And if they see, oh, a professional athlete is doing this workout or doing this exercise, there must be something to it. And now they're going back to that trainer or that coach and saying, hey, why am I not doing this? I've gotten that question from multiple kids saying, why aren't we doing stuff like this? And a lot of times I can explain it perfectly. I can articulate it as, you know, as best as anybody could. But to them, they don't care. They just want all the likes, and they want to do what they deem to be glamorous. And even though the risk far outweighs the reward of a lot of these things that are being shared, and I believe that these big social media accounts, whether it's, you know, SportsCenter, ESPN, Bleacher Report, Overtime, all these big things, they have a responsibility, which, again, they're hyping up these exercise and workout videos from athletes that are just, you know, can only be used for you know, negative adaptations if especially youth athletes try to get a hold of them and try to replicate them themselves. So I guess maybe the spread of misinformation on social media, we'll call it. Number two is lazy and crappy exercise prescription. So now we're focusing more on the individual fitness professional, the coach, the trainer. Now, I want to say I want to be a little bit more lax on this one, because obviously with the world we're living in right now, it's obvious it's a lot more difficult to nail down exercise prescription. You're not with your athletes. You are not with your client. You're trying to do everything virtually. So, of course, some concessions have to be made when it comes to exercise prescription. However, that doesn't mean you need to completely dumb it down. And we've seen a lot of that, and that's where I still will draw the line. Yes, we're living in a world where there's a lot of challenges, but it doesn't give you an excuse to just completely forget everything you learned becoming a trainer or becoming a coach, and, you know, fall into the traps that make shitty trainers shitty trainers. Because, I mean, I've held no punches when it comes to criticizing my own industry, is especially with when it comes to personal training. It is 90% con artists, and the 10% of us, I know I sound like a DB when I say us and just automatically think of myself as one of the good ones, but you know, the 10% of us that are doing the work and are doing things right, you know, it's not enough. So the lazy exercise prescription, and what I mean by that, you know, I've made allusions to this in the past in previous episodes, but, you know, the guy or gal that's, you know, just pulling exercises out of a hat, really no thought process to what movements they're going to prescribe to a client or a group of athletes. No thought process as far as, you know, volume. You know, like I saw this the other day, a coach put this out on Twitter for his athletes, and, you know, he had the alphabet, and then each letter of the alphabet corresponded to, you know, 20 sit-ups and 15 push-ups and, you know, whatever. Every, you know, A was 20 sit-ups, B was 15 push-ups, and, like, so forth and so down, like, down the line. And then he would just come up with a word, and then the athletes would, you know, spell that word with the corresponding exercise. And while that might be fun, it's completely irresponsible. As far as you are the one prescribing that exercise, there has to be a purpose behind it. And there's no purpose behind something like that, where the volume is arbitrary, the movement is arbitrary. At that point, you know, what the hell are you even doing giving these kids anything to do? This was a high school strength and conditioning coach. And again, I understand it. You don't have the ability to coach your athletes in person, so you can't, you know, you've got to generalize it a little bit. But to go so far where now you're not even giving any thought to volume, you're letting I always hold myself to this standard, and I try to hold others to this standard as well. If a kid can go on to Google and find a just as good, if not better, workout than one you can prescribe, you should lose your certification, lose your license. I know that's super dramatic and hyperbolic, but you got to take a step back, at least, at a minimum, take a step back and reevaluate what the hell you're doing. So the lazy exercise prescription, I want to go into a couple specifics. You guys have heard me talk about the warm-up before, and within a warm-up, I think 90% of warm-ups I see performed by trainers, and this is such a huge pet peeve of mine of trainers I've used to work with and work alongside, is, all right, client's here. All right, you go ahead and walk on the treadmill for 10 minutes as I go do something else. And it happens so often. Not only is the treadmill warm-up one of my least favorite things on the planet, because I think it's just a cop-out, especially in private personal training, that client's paying you by the minute, and you're saying to that client, the first $10, I think it's, you know, the dollar a minute is about, you know, the industry average. So, hey, you're going to pay me $10 to go walk on that treadmill is basically what you're saying to that client. And that's never sat well with me. So I've always, you know, found a desire to just hold people accountable to finding a better warm-up. Get that person ready for what you're about to have them do. Because after you walk through, you know, I've seen a 10-minute warm-up on the treadmill of just like a 2-mile-an-hour walk and, you know, terrible posture, no attention to any kind of breathing techniques or anything like that, possibly because they're walking so slow that they're not really changing their breathing pattern at all. But, and then all of a sudden now they're going to go to have, do a workout that has nothing to do with what movements they just performed by walking on the treadmill. So, again, it's just a waste of time. It's a waste of people's money, you know, when you get into the private sector. And it just, so many people can do better, and there's just this constant refusal not to. And like I said, it just bugs me. So that's the first specific. The second specific, the second and third kind of go hand in hand. So the second one was high volume plyometrics. You see this, whether it's, you know, popular at-home workout programs that are out there, whether it's, again, in a personal training setting or in the group exercise setting, is you'll see these circuits that involve plyometric activity, and the volume that is performed is just outrageous to me. To me, if you really want somebody to be, to be good at plyometrics, and especially have plyometrics, you know, increase their performance and be meaningful to what they want to accomplish, volume has to have a better look taken at it. So, you know, when you're having somebody just do, you know, box jumps or squat jumps, you know, static squat jumps, or, you know, any kind of high energy plyo, and you're having them doing it a shitload and just over and over, and they're getting exhausted and they're still having them do it, and you're yelling in their ear and keep going. Plyometrics could have a disastrous effect once fatigue overrides their ability to stay mechanically sound. Fatigue is a good thing. It's a great thing in lifting and in exercise in general. But when that fatigue sets in so much where now you're doing things, you know, not only your mechanics have dipped, but now you're getting borderline dangerous in the way you're doing things. And now you add in a high impact movement like plyometrics. You know, obviously we're talking about jumping mainly, but, I just think that such a detriment is being done. And we've got to be smarter about how we program plyometrics. And to me, I mean, any powerful movement, I usually stick with a low rep, high set ratio versus just do a shitload, we're going to time it, and form be damned. It sucks because it's a losing battle, because a lot of popular programs that are out there, a lot of you know, popular exercise classes that are out there. And quite frankly, people at large, because it's been done that way for such a long time, that's what people know and that's what people expect. So that's what they do. And like I said, it doesn't sit right with me, and it's something we've got to change. Last one is burpees, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the, you know, the plyometric and the volume behind plyometrics, but burpees kind of are in that same light where it performed, really, it's, now that I'm looking at it, burpees kind of encapsulates the last 2 points as far as, you know, lazy exercise prescription as a whole, because I believe that burpees are the absolute cop-out for a trainer. If I see a trainer that prescribes burpees at any point of a workout for any athlete or any client or any person, even themselves, and it might be unfair, guys, but I automatically drop that trainer down a peg in my mind as far as how good of a trainer he or she is. Because basically, burpees are the, I can't think of anything, let's do this. Or I don't want to think of anything, so let's do this. You know, burpees get billed as this, you know, all-inclusive, full bodies, you know, strengthening movement. But I believe not only from the perspective of programming a burpee is it lazy, but having somebody perform a burpee, and especially the way it's implemented in a lot of different settings, is you get zero benefit. And again, now you're just going to get somebody exhausted and putting their body in terrible spots, having them do it over and over and over again. Now, some of you who are listening to this and are either current or previous clients of mine might be saying, well, Pete, we've done burpees. What the hell, man? And that is true. I have programmed burpees. And when I was a younger trainer, it was because I didn't know any better. And lately, I've been programming burpees safely because of the fact that I know, just like the, you know, high volume plyometrics, it's something I can't avoid. It's nothing I'm going to completely beat. So it's like that old adage, if you can't beat them, join them. I know, and I'm thinking of one young gal I was training specifically. I know what she was about. She loved group exercise classes, and I know the local group exercise class that she loved going to did burpees all the time. And I know she's not going to not do that just because I don't like them, and I've explained why I don't like them to her, but and she seemed to understand it. But I know she was still going to do it. So it's basically, okay, I can't make you not do burpees and substitute other things that I think are more you know, functionally beneficial. So I'm just going to teach you why each individual segment of the burpee is important. And then perhaps, maybe, just maybe, the next time you go to that class and you perform burpees, you'll kind of think about a lot of those things in your head. And instinctively, your body's going to react the way your mind wants it to. And then now that's going to have a carryover effect. Now that every time you do that burpee, you know, we're going to have more of the things we need to have happen. That's my goal. Whether or not that happens, you know, obviously it's out of my control at that point. But at least on my end, I can at least rest easy knowing that I educated that client as to why a burpee, you know, can be beneficial when focusing on the individual segments, but not necessarily just flying through each transitional period in between the segments. Because I do think, you know, squatting deep is a very, very functionally beneficial thing to be able to do. Jumping back and to be able to instinctively stabilize when you get into a high plank position is a great skill to have. You know, again, a plyometric added to it. And I know there's a lot of variations of burpees out there, but I'm thinking about like going down, jumping back into a plank, you know, doing a push-up, jumping, you know, back into a tuck position, and then jumping up into a squat. You motor through that as so many trainers and coaches want you to do, you're going to miss every single beneficial point of the individual stations, we'll say. And you're just going to be focusing on getting to the next thing, and you're not giving your body the opportunity to react to those different you know, not only stimuli, but different positions and be able to stabilize and then mobilize properly. So burpees, long story short, don't do them. There's a lot of great other things out there, and I would love to be able to go over those with you. And burpees suck, so hashtag team no burpees. Look it up. There's a lot of people that are starting that movement. Last thing that bugs me about fitness professionals is a lot of us are hung up on ourselves. And yes, of course, there's always going to be ego that goes into trainers and coaches and myself. I'm not immune to that. Obviously, I started my own podcast because, you know, I think I am smart enough to share a lot of the thoughts that I have. So, you know, I'm definitely in the ego boat. But when that ego drips over into being a selling point, and I guess I'll give the example of, you know, when you're a trainer, and most trainers, you know, are independent contractors. So they kind of work for themselves, and we're kind of on the hook to get our own clients, you know, when we're in the private sector. And when I sell myself to a client, well, I try not to really sell myself, more of just sell, you know, what I want to do. And then obviously, you know, being able to provide the education to have them at some point take over to be able to be their own trainer. That's my whole goal. But you see all the time that trainers will say, hey, here's what I've done, or here's who I've trained. Train with me now. And that selling point will start and end with, look how awesome I am. And I always equated that to, like, let's say, you know, I'm going into, I've got to get a knee replacement, full knee replacement, and I go to see an orthopedic surgeon. And I say, Doc, I've got really bad knees. I need you to fix me up. And his response is, her response is, man, my knees are awesome. I just climbed Kilimanjaro last month, and I've never felt better. It's like, okay. And like, yeah, I've got great knees, so I'll fix it right up. I have no idea whether he or she is a good surgeon. I have no idea whether he or she has a good, you know, plan of recovery and, you know, plan of care for me. They just told me about what they are like. So I think that's something that, again, needs to be addressed head on, in especially in the personal training side of things. That if I see a client, and this is something that I'd be willing to bet most people who listen to this, regardless of if you've known me a week or if you've known me a year or if you know me 10 years or my whole life. I used to work with two very, very major professional sports teams. And I used to work exclusively with a lot of very high-profile athletes. That's something I never like telling people. Yeah, it's come up because there's been a lot of, again, I'm a really small dude, 5'4", 150 pounds. So naturally, when I work with professional athletes, there's a lot of, you know, jawing back and forth and a lot of, you know, making fun and all that stuff of my small stature. And so naturally, like, things will come up when I'll share different stories about working with those guys. But, you know, that's something that I never want to lead with of, you know, hi, nice to meet you. I'm Pete. Yeah, I used to work with so-and-so. How sweet is that? You know, to be honest, I could tell you all the different athletes I've worked with, what I've done for all these athletes. And, you know, I'm not going to share any names because it was technically part of a rehabilitation setting. So I don't want to, you know, break any privacy laws there. But, you know, imagine if I say, yeah, I worked with so-and-so. Here's what I did with so-and-so. You know, how sweet am I? And that tells you nothing about me as a trainer. You know, all it does is, you know, it could be even a situation where it's just, it's who you know versus what you know, which, to be honest, when I started with one of those teams, it kind of was that situation. I was in a good spot, and I knew a guy who was the head physical therapist for one of the teams, and, you know, it's kind of, that got me the foot in the door kind of deal. And honestly, I'm a much better fitness professional and practitioner than I was then. So that's kind of, I guess, an example of when I was working for those sports teams, I didn't know half of what I know now, or at least, you know, the experience has driven me to kind of, honestly, there's a lot I would do differently, we'll say. But the point of the matter is, you know, that's never going to be a selling point for me. And so that's obviously like who you train, but, you know, how you train too. So I've seen, you know, a trainer have a consultation with a client, and their entire consultation was the trainer going over his accomplishments. You know, hey, I won this competition of, I don't even know what you call it, but you know, those competitions where people like paint themselves and pose in bathing suits. And I don't know what they technically call that, but physique competition, maybe, I don't know. And yeah, I won it this year. I won it in this place. And you know, it's like, that's great. But you didn't spend any time telling the client how you're going to get, you know, him or her there. And or do you even know that they want to do anything remotely close to that? So, yeah, ego is a good thing, because you got to have a little bit of that to be able to kind of have confidence and, you know, be confident in what you're doing and why you're doing it. But it can't spill over into being so egotistical that all you care about is making sure that people know, hey, I'm sweet, I'm alpha, you're, you know, the beta, and everything I say is gold because here's what I've done in the past. Again, there's so much that we need to do as fitness professionals to better ourselves, because quite frankly, personal training is getting killed, and rightfully so, because like I said in the beginning, there are so many con artists in our industry that we've got to weed through. And like I said, it's not cheap, especially, again, in the private sector, personal training isn't cheap. And it bugs me to no end to see people spend their hard-earned money on something that they want so badly, and we're just taking it from them. And again, at some point, somebody's got to draw a line in the sand. All right, so now I want to shift the conversation to, this is something I've named the best exercises that you're probably not doing. You know, I share a lot of content about how I like to keep most of the things I do simple. And in fact, if you were to look at, you know, I don't know, let's just say, you know, 20 clients of mine. And if you were just to draw 20 clients at random and you were to look at a majority of the exercises that I have them do, you'll probably look at it and you'll say, you know what, Pete, like, these are all almost the same, you know, across the board. And I guess, you know, at first glance, it might seem that way, but I have a lot of different variations of, you know, very broad, you know, movement patterns that I can apply to each individual. So yeah, I might, you know, to Bobby Joe, I might have Bobby Joe be doing, you know, a hinge, a lunge, and, you know, a squat. And, you know, and then I have, you know, Billy Sue doing a hinge, a lunge, and a squat. But they could have two completely different workouts, because obviously you've got to apply those movement patterns to the individual. You got to apply it to what they're trying to accomplish. And then obviously all those things can drive volume, and things and implementation, things of that nature. And so, yeah, if you look at it from just like a list, if you just list out exercises, yeah, they're going to look the same. But, because I like to do simple movement patterns, simple movements, simple things. I don't like to overcomplicate it a lot. There's definitely a time for those kind of things, but, again, you guys know I like to go at things from an educational standpoint first. So re-educating the simple movement patterns is always where I start. And basically there's six things. There's, you, like I said, you hinge, you lunge, you squat, you push, you pull, and you carry. That's it. That's my whole program. Now, within those six, you know, functional movement patterns, each one of those, you could draw 100 different exercises off of each one of those things. And that's where, you know, creativity is great, but you've got to still be careful to make sure that you're picking out the right variation for exactly what you're trying to go after. So there's always got to be a purpose and a focus behind everything that you do. And to that point, you know, yes, when I share a lot of the simple is better type of things, and especially with some of the videos that I'll share on like Instagram and so forth, you know, it looks like I'm just doing the same thing every day, same thing every day, same thing every day. You know, especially because they're really short videos, so I don't get a whole lot of time to explain the differences day to day. But it could get easy to somebody to fall in the trap of just doing, you know, the same variation of a hinge, same variation of a squat, same variation of a lunge, and so on and so forth. You know, pushing and pulling only horizontally, and get, there's a lot of cool variations. So I've kind of plucked out some of my favorite things that most people leave out of their program. So number one, and again, I guess this is no particular order. This is just kind of how I thought of it. Number one is deadlift. And yeah, obviously that's pretty broad and pretty vague. But essentially what I wanted to get across here was that 90% of the clients that I've trained, you might even go higher, but let's go about 90. So just a vast majority of clients that I've trained, and especially females, have no idea how to perform a deadlift or even just a basic hinge, the hinging pattern. Hinging through your hips, I think, is such an important skill to be able to have without it being a detriment, you know, to, you know, your trunk, your back, your axial skeleton, your lower extremities. Because I think so many people are afraid of that. They don't like the idea of bending over, especially loaded, because they automatically think, no, I'm not going to do that. That's going to hurt something. And it's honestly, it's something that I've used a lot to treat, you know, different, you know, dysfunction, you know, in the back, in the trunk, where I've used re-educating the hinge pattern and then progressively loading the hinge pattern to be able to tell the body, hey, it's okay to bend over, because now we're going to do it the right way. We're going to do it the right way consistently. So we're going to prove to you, body, that we can bend over and everything's going to be okay. And I just see, you know, people are scared of the deadlift. And I think maybe it's because people associate deadlifting with just massive amounts of weight. And again, there's times for that, and there's times for loading up the hinge pattern with just variable resistance, a resistance band, or no resistance at all. There's times for that too. So know that deadlift, when you hear the word deadlift, A, there's a lot of different variations of it, obviously, like I just said. But B, there's a lot of different implementations of it as well. And it's a very crucial thing to be able to have in your back pocket, of knowing how to hinge properly. Number two is the posterior pelvic tilt. This is my favorite exercise of all time. And it's, some people wouldn't even call it an exercise, but essentially it's a rotation of your pelvis in the sagittal plane, big word alert, that is a way to engage your abs. So everybody's heard that cue, engage your abs, you know, keep your abs firing, turn your abs on, squeeze your abs. Those are all cues that are all over the place. And essentially what you're doing is you're rotating your pelvis posteriorly into a neutral position, and the abs are responsible for that. And it's usually how we don't like to be. Usually we have that pelvis sitting slightly tilted anteriorly, especially if we're standing. And that can cause the lumbar spine to arch, leading your ribs to kind of flare out, and thus lengthen your abs. So now when you shorten your abs and contract them, that's bringing those ribs down. The pelvis rotates posteriorly into a neutral position. And now you're in a good position to receive compressive force onto, you know, your spine and the rest of your body, essentially. But, you know, I always think of, and this is something that, you know, I'll allude back to my days when I would oversee, not oversee, I guess I was just part of the team that would oversee injured athletes for the professional sports teams that I worked for. And we would kind of oversee their transition back into, you know, regular team activities. And one of the big metrics that I always used to have for a lot of the guys was, you know, obviously they're giant dudes that can lift just a shit ton of weight. But something that I would always hold them accountable for is, what are you doing with the pelvis when you're lifting all that weight? You know, can you control and maintain pelvic neutrality or at least close to that, so that the abs are at least reacting in some way? So when you reach that full extension from a deadlift, are you able to meet that powerful hip extension with some type of abdominal activation to make sure that your spine sits in a neutral spot? So now all that compressive force that is now all of a sudden put upon you, it's being evenly distributed throughout your body. You know, they say deadlift can work, you know, 80% of the body's musculature, but that's only contingent upon whether or not we get 80% of the body's musculature in the game, and not sitting on the sideline. And a lot of times, if you extend from a deadlift and you've got nothing going in your abs and your hips shoot all the way forward, and that results in overextension of the trunk, and so now all that compressive force being put on your body is now being stopped in certain places. It's being stopped in your shoulders because you're probably, you know, aren't engaging your lats enough. And it's being stopped in your lumbar spine because your abs aren't doing anything to keep everything neutral, to have that compressive force continue to flow down into the lower extremities. So now something that you think is adding a lot of lower extremity strength isn't. So the posterior pelvic tilt is something that I think you can apply to every single lift out there, and it can enhance that lift. Not only are you getting an isometric contraction through the abs, adding abdominal strength, you are now also using the abs as a preventer for compensation. Now let's look at another example. Let's look at something like the bicep curl. Because, again, I'm not a huge fan of bicep curls, but, again, there's no stopping it, especially, you know, the gym bros from always doing heavy bicep curls. Imagine the guy that's doing the high bicep curl, and now he's starting to swing. He's starting to lean back a little bit too much, starting to lean back, lean back, lean back. And now, when he's at the top of his bicep curl, his elbows are still at 90 degrees. And you're like, well, what the heck? And it's because his arch of his low back is getting the rest of that, you know, it's completing the movement for him. So imagine now those abs are on, keeping your pelvis neutral, and it eliminates, at least to a certain extent, the sway in the arch of the back. And what that does, when you've taken away that compensation, you're going to isolate your target muscle, getting a much more beneficial lift. Even again, yeah, it's just a bicep curl, and curls are for girls, and all those other things that people say. You know, posterior pelvic tilt is a great stabilizer, and it is a great addition into any movement. Number three is the rear foot elevated split squat, otherwise known as the Bulgarian split squat, but I call it rear foot elevated split squat. But imagine it's just like it's like a static lunge, and I suppose you don't have to elevate the back leg. You can still do it with it on the ground, and there's a lot of different things that are going to play into why you would elevate and why not. But I really enjoy lunges, and I really like programming lunges. But if I have a client that is struggling with joint alignment in a lunge, you know, especially a forward lunge, they step forward and their foot is always landing in a different spot. It's always landing at a different angle. And now that, you know, is creating a different type of torque and demand on their knee, which is affecting what type of and how much muscle activation they can get. And sometimes you got to dial it back and take away a couple of elements. And now I have them step forward. You know, again, let's just say we're keeping the rear foot on the ground. Stay in that position and just go up and down. Focus on keeping the ankle and the knee and the hip in line with each other. And so that now you've eliminated things to think about in your mind. You don't have to think about stepping forward, stepping back. You don't have to be worried about, you know, pushing off your toes excessively, putting too much force on the front of your knees. You can just worry about literally just sinking into the motion, you know, feeling the entire ground with your whole foot, increasing the amount of available musculature to provide movement. So I would give that one a try. And then obviously, if your body tolerates, you know, put that back leg up on a... I always use a windowsill when I work out at our house, but because we don't have like a chair or a step that's like at the right height. But play around with elevating that back leg and the demand that creates, and then go on it from there. But, you know, lunges are pretty common. But when you look at unilateral work, I think it's an easy movement to also load up on too. So if you want to load up on unilateral work and you're a little bit nervous to do it in lunges, because, you know, obviously balance can play a role into it when you've either got heavy dumbbells or a barbell or a trap bar or anything like that. You know, you can load up on a split squat pretty easily and stay pretty safe. Next one is the straight arm pull down. So it's exactly what it sounds. It's you know, your arms straight, pulling down towards your hips. Usually performed with like cable resistance coming from, you know, anchored above, or I even use like a resistance band, because to me, you don't need a ton of resistance for this movement to have a great effect. And basically, I like this movement the most for illustrating to a client the role that shoulder extension has in activating your upper abs. Because a lot of people think that the arms really can't affect the abs as much as the legs can. But I love a resisted straight arm pull down to be able to show somebody how that can aid in abdominal activation. Really nice. And it's a cool isometric exercise for your triceps too, because the demand as you pull down, that resistance is going to want to bend your elbows, and your triceps have to stay activated to keep your arms straight. So you get a nice little isometric, you know, tricep activation as well, which is always pretty cool. And the last thing but not least that's always left out is sprinting. If you have any type of cardio in your workout, you know, whether it's just, like I said, like the plyometric stuff, or people like to go running. But if you truly want to get faster, sprint. Work on sprinting and treat it like any other lift. Treat it like, you know, pay attention to the volume behind it and hold yourself to that. Give yourself a plan of, I'm going to perform, you know, X number of yards. I'm going to do it this much time. I'm going to keep track of how much, you know, energy I'm exerting. And I'm going to be smart about that to make sure that every, you know, every repetition of a sprinting, you know, whether it's, you know, 30 yards, 40 yards, whatever, then I've got enough in the tank to perform that at a full sprint. Because to me, if you want to get, like I said, you want to get faster, you got to run as fast as you can. And it's a powerful movement. I've always been a believer that sprinting is strength work and not cardio work. Yeah, you're going to have a cardio element of it, but sprinting is strength work first and foremost. And I don't ever see it performed. And I get it. A lot of it has to do with the lack of linear space and, you know, the lack of a facility perhaps, but, you know, I sprint in my backyard, and it's not the safest idea, I suppose, because I don't have an even yard by any stretch. And I would not suggest that if you are somebody who, you know, you've got random dips and, you know, little holes and stuff all over your yard. And I would make sure to, you know, either find a road or find a track or find something where you can sprint. But definitely don't leave it out. Give it a shot. If you're somebody who, you know, you like to incorporate jogging or running into your workout, you know, take an idea of getting some sprints in, and seeing how that changes things for you. All right, as we wrap this one up, I'm going to do something I do every episode here, is shine a little spotlight on somebody who's, like I said, either been an influence to me or somebody who I think is a very valuable person to follow. And today I want to shine a light on the three-headed monster that is Step One Fitness. Step One Fitness is a collective of three of the smartest individuals that I've had the pleasure of working with and knowing. Chris, Bree, and Anthony are all athletic trainers. And they have vast experience in the rehabilitation settings as well as athletic settings. And they use all that experience to, they kind of, you know, put their heads together and provide personal training services both virtually and in person. And, you know, like this whole podcast, guys, has been about kind of me bitching about all the con artists in the industry. And when I said, you know, there's like 10% of us that, you know, are worth a damn, and these guys are in that 10%, you know, if not, you know, some of the best that are around. And at a minimum, you know, you gotta go check them out. I believe they're on Facebook and Instagram, and it's at Step1Fit. You know, Chris is kind of like me, smaller guy, but he is like 3 or 4 times as strong as me, and just an absolute expert on, you know, getting the most out of a lift, and he explains everything really, really well, and really good at just you know increasing the efficiency within a lift, and making sure that you're getting everything out of the things that he prescribes. Anthony, you know, former collegiate athlete, and definitely more kind of geared towards sports-specific and athletic performance training. And again, a really, really smart dude, and, you know, has a lot of really cool, unique approaches to training that he likes to share. And then the Bree is, you know, kind of, again, you know, athletic trainer, brilliant gal, but she has more of like a yoga background that she shares a lot of. And I think she's still doing this, that I think it's every Tuesday evening at 6:30, she pops on the Facebook Live and does a free yoga session. So I would definitely check that out, because one of the best things about these guys is the amount of free content that they're putting out right now is just sitting out there waiting for you to learn from and benefit from. So please join me in continuing to follow and support them. And obviously, if they are, you know, look like somebody that can help you, or, you know, somebody that you at least want to have a conversation with, I'd be willing to bet that they will take that phone call or take that message on social media. So give them a shout. Again, Step1Fit is their handle on Instagram, Step1Fitness. Chris, Bree, Anthony, you guys are the best, and thank you. Thank you for joining in another episode of the 9.8 Podcast. Hope you all stay safe and healthy, and we'll see you next time.